This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
So the three largest seed companies in the world are essentially owned by chemical companies.
There's no time better than after a holiday of feasting to remember where we get our food. Ultimately, most of our complex recipes begin with a simple seed. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to author and environmental journalist Mark Shapiro to discuss the current state of agribusiness and his book, Seeds of Resistance. We take a look back at his last book, Carbon Shock, to see how it's weathered the past 5 years of increased climate change-related events, discuss the unlikely feud over corn nuts, and examine some of the valuable work of leading seed advocates around the globe. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Mark Shapiro. He's an author, an environmental journalist, and he's a lecturer at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Mark, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we had you on a few years ago when you had just written your last book, Carbon Shock, a tale of risk and calculus on the front lines of the disrupted global economy. And now you have a new book called Seeds of Resistance, and I do want to dive into that. But with a little bit of reflection, if you had to write an appendix or an addendum right now to Carbon Shock, an epilogue, if you will, what lessons have we learned since you wrote the book?
Essentially what we've discovered is that the theme of the book was about the hidden economic consequences of climate change. So it was about basically how the financial dimension to the enormous shifts that are underway on Earth are often intentionally hidden by the structures of the economic system. And Carbon Shock was an effort to unpeel those layers and actually identify the many ways in which we were already paying billions of dollars for the consequences of climate change. And we had this kind of false dichotomy between an investment in the future to deal with climatic disruption versus the status quo, as if the first was a lot more consequential than the second. And what Carbon Shock did was I kind of investigated these claims and found that there was enormous disruptions to the financial order already underway as a result of climate change. So what we've learned, and what's actually been interesting for me to see, is because I wrote that, 5 years ago or something, is that those consequences are coming fully into light. I mean, now you have the National Climate Assessment, which just came out last week, identifying the enormous consequences right now of climate change to municipal, federal, state government authorities, and identifying very clearly the enormous financial consequences to the public resources. And when we say financial, I mean, that's just one way to understand it, because the disruptions are enormous to people's lives, to people's safety, sometimes literally to people's lives, and the intensity of fires that we've been seeing up in Northern California just in the past couple of weeks. So that's one way to understand these consequences. So I think that the consequences of climate change are being far more deeply understood and far more deeply felt now than they were back 5 years ago when I did what I could to identify them. And in a strange, perverse way, I feel that that book was kind of validated. You asked if I would write an epilogue to that book. And in fact, that's kind of what it feels like I've written with Seeds of Resistance, because in that book, in Carbon Shock, I spent a chapter talking about the consequences of climate change for agriculture, the high volatility, the loss of water, and how that was impacting farmers. That was basically one chapter in a book that covered many different aspects. And now I've written an entire book on seeds, which is an effort to kind of explore the consequences of climatic change for the most fundamental ingredient on Earth, which is seeds, which keep us alive and are at the root of all sustenance.
Yes, we don't really think of seeds generally as one of the byproducts of this climate change reality. And in terms of the hidden economic costs of climate change, agriculture and food production are obviously an integral part of that equation. Was the chapter that you wrote for Carbon Shock kind of the genesis of Seeds of Resistance, or was this a separate research project, Mark?
In Carbon Shock, I traveled up and down the Central Valley, and I documented essentially how climate change was disrupting agriculture in, you know, let's face it, a very conservative part of the state, was facing enormous shifts in growing conditions. And even though some of the people did not want to even use the word climate change, the financial consequences told the story. Their yields were declining. They were having to spend more and more and more money on inputs to protect their crops from new insects and pests that were coming into the Central Valley and still are because it's getting hotter and drier. And the consequences to the crop insurance system are huge because crop insurance has been paying out billions of dollars, which during the Obama administration was identified clearly as related to the consequences of climate change. Of course, that's changed a little enormously under the Trump administration. So one, it got me thinking, writing that chapter, reporting that chapter, going up and down the Central Valley, talking to a lot of people in agriculture, got me thinking about what this means for our food system. And then I've been following, you know, for like several decades now. I was one of the people I spent some time in Iowa back several decades ago and wrote about and reported on what the consequences were of genetic uniformity in the Midwestern corn. And I spent some time with a farm family who told me how they lost their corn crop when a disease that started in North Carolina swept all the way across America to Iowa in the matter of a few weeks because all the seeds were the same. And at that time, I was a lot younger than I am now, but the image never left me. The consequences never left me. I went to a seed bank in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I'll never forget walking through that seed bank, looking at all those shelves upon shelves upon shelves of seeds and wondering really what they were and why, what was so important about those tiny little seeds in these kind of little plastic canisters kept in these almost freezing conditions in a refrigerator. Why? And when I started looking into it, I learned about this thing called genetic resources, which are essentially the resources made from the genetic composition of plants that sustain us here on Earth.
So why don't we start at the beginning of the book? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Frito-Lay and corn nuts? This is an interesting little example of the insanity of our seed stock and the corporatization of what has been a part of our food system for thousands of years.
Yes, and part of what I explore in Seeds of Resistance is where the seeds are that we need to deal with climatic disruption. And when you ask that question, it takes you in all these kind of amazing directions. And one of those threads led me deep into the Native American communities in the Southwest, in Arizona, New Mexico, Southern Colorado, where farmers and scientists and members of the public who are engaged with these matters have suddenly come to this realization rather late that in fact Native American people have been growing food in highly stressed conditions low quantities of water, high temperatures for centuries. I mean, Native American people, the history of domesticated agriculture in the Southwest goes back thousands of years. And so one of the consequences of the increasing environmental stress has been a return to kind of roots and actually to understand, for example, how are Native people planting their crops? What are the seeds they use? How do those seeds reflect the ability of plants to withstand periods of drought? And a lot of these seeds are deeply embedded in the culture of those Native communities. So That's been an important thread as we return to try to figure out how we're going to kind of maneuver and survive and adapt to the circumstances that we're now facing. So I tell a story in the book about this incredible seed bank in outside of Tucson called Native Seed Search. And they, for about the past 15 years or so, 20 years, have been collecting the seeds of the Southwest, many of which come out of Native American communities. And they have a farm down in southern Arizona, and they have a seed bank in outside of Tucson. And they also have a little gift shop where they sell products. You can actually go in there in Tucson. You can get seeds. You can get natural fertilizers. And you can get these delicious boiled corn kernels that are salted that are absolutely crunchy and delicious. And the Native Seed Search, in their early renderings of this kind of product that they said, it's like a snack, said, use the language, kind of like corn nuts. They taste kind of like corn nuts. And one morning, in comes the mail, and there's a letter from Frito-Lay, the huge food processing company, accusing Native Seed Search of violating their trademark on the words corn nuts, which that company has apparently trademarked, and demanded that they immediately cease and desist from the use of those terms. And I write about this because it was a complete and utter surprise, as if some kind of like missive was coming from some gargantuan force somewhere out in the world to this tiny little seed bank. And what it requiring them to change the wording on a product that Native people have been eating for, you know, several, at least hundreds of years. I talked to several people in the Hopi tribe in that area who told me about how they used to eat these things for snacks when they were kids. They're basically boiled corn kernels with parched corn kernels with salt, and they're absolutely delicious.
And to be clear, a kernel of corn is actually a seed of corn, right?
Yes. Thank you. We need to remember that when you're eating corn, you're eating a seed. And a kernel is a seed. And those things that you come crunching on when you're eating a parched corn, if you're in Hopi territory, or you're eating, quote, corn nuts, if you're nibbling on a Frito-Lay package, are seeds. You could plant them, and out of them would come a corn plant. So I found this kind of incredible that a company that has commercially exploited the corn with a multi-million-dollar product producing, quote, corn nuts, would be accusing a seed bank, essentially, of some sort of violation by using even the words corn nuts, as if they can own the words corn nuts. The Native Seed Search had to kind of capitulate. They didn't have money to fight a multi-year protest against Frito-Lay, so they changed the wording, and you can still buy those things, but it says something like, you know, delicious parched corn. It doesn't say corn nuts anymore. But the main point of that story was, here was a huge multinational company laying claim to a genetic resource, to corn kernels, that has been in Native communities for thousands and thousands of years, growing in our own American Southwest, and attempting to claim control over the kind of legacy of those seeds. And that is, in a sense, symbolic of the larger struggle going on over who is going to control the seeds that we need to deal with moving forward, and to deal with climatic stress. Because the fact is that actually many corn seeds coming out of Native communities in the United States and in Mexico, where there's very thriving communities, are showing very, very, very high resilience to climatic changes.
Well, I met you. And you stood out like a ruby in a black man's ear. You were playing like a devil wearing wings. Wearing wings, you look so grand. Wearing wings, do you tie them to your shoulders just to sing?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Mark Shapiro. His latest book is called Seeds of Resistance. So, Mark, we were talking about the corporatization of seeds, how it related to Frito-Lay, but Frito-Lay is not one of the three chemical companies that dominate the seed business. Why don't you kind of give our listeners who aren't aware of this dynamic an overview?
Well, what's happened and what I write about in the book is this kind of convergence of forces, which is on the one hand the high levels of disruptions going on in food growing regions due to climate change, and at the same time this extraordinary level of consolidation in the seed industry. So starting in 2017, you have three companies that now control more than 50% of all commercially traded seeds. And these companies, some of the, you might be familiar with the names of some of them, but I'll tell them to you. Those three companies are Monsanto, which has now been absorbed by Bayer. So Monsanto, America's biggest seed company, absorbed by Germany's biggest agrochemical company, and to make one big Bayer-Monsanto enterprise. The second seed giant now is Dow DuPont. Dow and DuPont, each of them individually, very powerful and profitable companies making chemicals for agricultural reasons, but also for industrial reasons, for manufacturing, for the U.S. military. Dow and DuPont now one company. And the third seed company in the world is called Syngenta, which is a Swiss company, and which was a Swiss company, is now a Chinese company owned by ChemChina, which is the biggest chemical company in China. So the one thing that all three of those companies have in common is that the seed division is a division within a much larger enterprise that is a chemical, agrochemical company. So the three largest seed companies in the world are essentially owned by chemical companies. And that is having an enormous impact on the agricultural ecologies that are necessary to actually grow food. And this is where I kind of set the alarm bell off in the book about what the consequences of that are.
And I want to dive into some of the long-term potential consequences of having this consolidated dynamic. But what are the realities that we're feeling right now in terms of agricultural output because of over 50% of our seeds being controlled by these three chemical conglomerates?
Well, there are several consequences. One is that the big industrial fields that utilize those seeds are showing high rates of vulnerability to the climatic changes. So if you look, which I did do, into the Midwest, for example, big important food growing area, if you look into the Central Valley here in California, very important food growing area, other important food growing regions in the United States, for example, in the Southeast, are experiencing very significant drops in yield. And this, and I was looking at various yield reports and such to actually see those, and you see that basically in the main food growing areas of the United States. And what that indicates is that the industrial food system, where you have one or just several types of seeds across vast amounts of terrain, facilitated by applications of pesticides and herbicides to keep them alive, do not do well in a changing environment. So they're bred to deal with one particular set of conditions. Those conditions are now changing, and we can now see the vulnerabilities across the board. And in fact, it was interesting to see the National Climate Assessment, which again came out just last week, which basically reiterated this point and actually had taken obviously even a much broader look than I did in Seeds of Resistance, and had seen similar kind of pressures on agricultural yield across the parts of America where industrial agriculture is most focused. So one is you see the vulnerabilities of the industrial agriculture system. And two, you also see what is that industrial agriculture system? Well, one is that it's kind of the planting of single types of seeds across vast areas of land. And many of those seeds are reliant from the day they're bred on chemicals. They're owned by chemical companies. So those chemical companies produce what I call crack baby seeds. They're born addicted to chemicals. They can't survive without the application of pesticides or herbicides or other biocides. And so one consequence of having seed companies owned by chemical companies is that the chemical companies breed seeds that are reliant on their own products. So as a business plan, it's kind of a brilliant business plan because the companies get profits on both sides of that equation. They get to sell the seeds and they get to sell the chemicals that the seeds are reliant on.
And what kind of long-term impact could that result in, Mark?
Well, the long-term impact is multiple. Number one are the public health consequences of the application of toxic substances to farm fields. And we're starting to see that more and more with some of the chemicals coming out. Some of your listeners might have followed the glyphosate trial here in San Francisco, in which the world's most popular herbicide produced by Monsanto was found to actually be a contributor to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma among people who work with it on a regular basis. And that has been a very powerful warning shot to all of us about what the consequences of sustained exposure are to these kind of substances. Other kind of concerns are rising with dicamba, another kind of very potent herbicide. The neonicotinoids are now suspected of decimating bee populations. We could grow across the board as to what the public health consequences are of this kind of chemical dependency. And so one of the questions that I pose in Seeds of Resistance is we can see the public health consequences, and now let's look at the consequences for the actual production of that food, because the argument has long been that we actually need to use such chemical substances in order to ensure higher yields. And now what climate change is doing is shining a very harsh light on that assertion, because those levels of production are no longer occurring across many different crops. And I think that's a very, very powerful finding that I've found in researching, talking to people, looking into the scientific literature, et cetera. And so I think there are a number of different consequences to the idea of seeds being controlled by three chemical companies. And there are more when it comes to the biodiversity.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to author Mark Shapiro. So Mark, we've been talking about some of the consequences of having this consolidation in the seed industry, but there are advocates, and as you call them, seed rebels, who are fighting the good fight to break the system. It sounds like a lot of the cutting-edge advocacy work is taking place overseas in Europe. Maybe you can give us some insight into the work that's being done over there currently.
Well, first of all, the movement to resist the kind of corporate takeover of the seed business is global and very active in Europe, very active even here in the United States in a somewhat more diffuse fashion, and even in Africa and other developing countries. So in Europe, you see a very sophisticated campaign that has been waged for years over GMOs, and basically has succeeded in for the most part eliminating GMOs from the European market, which are, of course, GMOs for American farmers. This is like That's a very different situation than here in the United States. Also, in the European Union, there's been a very strong citizen campaign that's been very interesting to follow, where they are really paying attention to the types of seeds that the big companies try to patent. So a seed company now can go in and kind of breed a new seed with some characteristic that they assert is new, is quote new, and patent that seed. And that can occur both in the United States and the European Union. But in Europe, and it's been very interesting to see that there have been several public campaigns, very effective public campaigns, protesting, for example, the effort by Monsanto to patent a melon seed that is actually quite commonly used in India. And they, a whole citizen signed petitions protesting this. And there was another case where Syngenta, the Swiss company, attempted to patent or did patent a pepper that is a very commonly used pepper in Jamaica and in the Caribbean. And these public campaigns forced the European Patent Office to actually rescind the patents on those seeds. And the reason I mention this is, number one, it was truly a popular effort where it was several hundred thousand signatures sent to, of all places, the European Patent Office. And two, it established the principle in Europe that that genetic material obtained from a publicly funded institution or place, so for example, a publicly funded seed bank in Jamaica or a broadly available seed variety in India, could not be patented according to European Union laws. That was a very important precedent, which does not did not happen in the United States. And so in the United States, those kind of patents still hold, even if the material is drawn from a publicly accessible source. And so you begin to see a divergence between the European and American approach to plant patenting, which has been very important. So that there's a very high level of kind of citizen awareness of issues that can get, you know, kind of complicated when it comes to patenting and stuff like that, but very high engagement when it comes to food questions in the European Union. And that's starting to be kind of replicated here in the United States in interesting ways as well.
The book is called Seeds of Resistance, author Mark Shapiro. Mark, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thank you, Alex. Very nice to talk to you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Modesky Martin and Wood and Bonnie Raitt.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.